welcome back to the Football Bubble. It's myself, People, Cousin Mud, and Steve tonight. Patrick has a presentation to sort for work. He said in the Malaga actually at the weekend, so he won't have much time to get it completed. And
presentation on being a butler.
Butler, yeah.
Mr. And Butler can't even make it onto the pod.
You've waited a couple of weeks for that. And Big Tall Brandy is still gallivanting around Italy. I think he's actually in Milan at the minute. And so he'll be back next week. Probably for the best for Brenton that he is known about Chelsea because they are dick soup at the minute. Yeah, we're going to chat about a bit of the football. Obviously, Liverpool and Arsenal had wins the weekend. Manchester United did not, Stephen. As you type away frantically, he's typing his resignation letter frantically away in the background there during the pod. We will chat about that. We'll chat about.
Wow, fucking called out already. What are we like? 90 seconds in and called out. I might mean sending some like breaking news to you to break on the podcast.
You type away.
Do it in sentence.
You type away. We'll be chatting about that, chatting about obviously what's currently going on at Manchester United with Stephen. And then look ahead, just a bit of randomness and what's been going on in our lives and a bit of TV shows because we're discussing before we came on there about Star Wars and Marvel, which I think is going to be an interesting debate. John Patrick also has a question for us, which I'm going to start the pod with because us three kind of we like to dabble in a mixture of sports. Pardon me. So Patrick asked me at the weekend, would you rather see Ireland win this World Cup in the rugby or your football team win the Premier League? Now, my and Pat's football team is Liverpool. So I'll put it to you first, JD. Would you rather see Ireland win this World Cup or Arsenal win the Premier League this season?
I'd rather see Ireland win the World Cup.
You're a lunatic, but go on, give me your reasons.
Well, my reasons are because I don't think we'll ever have a better chance to win the World Cup. I think Arsenal have every season after season for a chance to do it. Whilst what will we get once every 4 years, and depending on how good the team is, this Ireland team is very good, best in the world at the minute actually. So yeah, I'd rather see them win the World Cup than see Arsenal win the Premier League. Because, you know, I've seen Arsenal win the Premier League before. I know it's been a long time, but I've seen it happen. So I'd rather see Ireland win the World Cup. And that's just my reason.
Stephen?
I would take Ireland never winning a World Cup ever again if it meant Manchester United, or ever reaching a semi-final in a World Cup if it meant Manchester United winning a league. I take lots of pleasure in saying that.
What about the Europa League? That's a league.
Nah. No, I genuinely, yeah, Ireland should win the World Cup. So it's completely, see.
Oh my God, he said it out loud.
We're allowed to say it out loud. We should say it out loud. They're the best team in the world.
Oh,
just playing the underdog stuff is nonsense. Like,
right, we're out in the quarterfinals. It's over.
But like, we're not even going to get a group stage.
No, like, we're done.
There's no question to me. It's Manchester United. Like,
what about the Raiders and Manchester United?
What for the Super Bowl or United?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, United. Whoa, you have no idea, that. Right?
He was no really, idea. Really, really like. Being miserable.
You have no idea what it's like to spend an entire decade and a half of your life crowing over people about why your football team is better than theirs.
Oh, no, I know what that's like on the other end.
Why they've gone 26 years without winning a league title. And then every single weekend for 38 weekends of the year, you've to hear from Liverpool fans. You know, that's just, no, I don't want anymore. I don't like that life. I worked out today, I spend about 6 days a year between the Raiders and United, watching just those two teams, 6 full days a year.
That's not a lot.
And just watching them play their sport and losing and being miserable with it. No, you're
that, that's not even including like watching content.
Exactly.
See, so not, like, it'd be very interesting to know how many days in the year you spent. Well, you know what? It's probably in triple figures.
Yeah, probably. And then all I have to do is look at WhatsApp on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday afternoon, and it's just bullshit from you lot. Do you know what that's like? No, I would.
Oh, it was so much fun.
Honestly, I would Dino, put Ireland back into the fucking Commonwealth to see Manchester United win.
Dino, is that a fucking serious question? Dino, what that's like to a Liverpool fan? You have the cheek. Yeah,
but you're living the best years of your life with Liverpool being good. I was.
But it took you like 20 years of it.
Yeah, but I was a child. You're no good now. As a child, I didn't have to read WhatsApp messages, did I?
No, I just had to go into school and listen to fucking
kids
nonsense.
Are supposed to be bullied in school, right? They're not supposed to be bullied when they're 41 years of age on WhatsApp.
Look, whatever your mother and dad father are texting you, it is not my fault. All right? And more power to them.
You're getting better at ignoring the messages.
Yeah, you're getting very good at it.
No, what I'm doing is I'm typing out a reply, then deleting it, and then being the bigger man.
You see, I have a couple of friends. So I have, obviously, Steve, and we have Rizzo. And then I have my friend Michael. So my friend Michael, I've talked about quite a bit in this boy. He was on my stag and stuff and everything. He's a massive United fan. He's also a humongous Danny Welbeck fan. I mean, he runs the Danny Welbeck fan club. He actually...
That guy?
Yeah, he runs it. He every time you mention United, talk about United, he will somehow refer back to if they still had Danny Welbeck, such and such, because... Danny Welbeck is a very intelligent footballer. You can see it now with Brighton, what's going on. And he just thinks if they had him in the squad over certain people, they'd be in much better standing. So when Welbeck scored on Saturday, I obviously had to remind Michael that Welbeck had scored on Saturday. And my simple message was, it was nice to see Danny Welbeck scoring at Old Trafford. It was very nice to see Danny Welbeck scoring at Old Trafford. Obviously not for Michael or Stephen or Rizzo, because that was for Brighton. But yes, I get it. I've had 30 years of it all pent up. So why, Stephen, unfortunately, you've still got a long way to go with me before I burn out.
It's not just you. It's like my best mate in work. It's my parents. It's incessant. It's absolutely my parents. Incessant.
That's unreal. It's my parents. That's amazing. on me, not that any of you is clear to courage, didn't ask me. I would, every day of the week, pick Liverpool to win the league over... Ireland winning the Rugby World Cup, Ireland winning a Football World Cup, Finn winning the Rugby World Cup.
I take Ireland winning the Football World Cup now.
Actually. I couldn't give a single fuck about the Republic of Ireland or Northern Ireland, to be quite honest.
Yeah,
but there's reasons for that we'll not discuss in this podcast.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, we're not storming. We are. We turn over.
They don't discuss
it. We actually work, yeah.
Yeah, they don't discuss anything. It's just for me. It's just Liverpool for me. It's just whatever. Same as you, Steve. I just would want to see them win the league again after this year, or as we talk about this year soon, or whatever. Just I'm going to the game going to the game on Sunday against West Ham, which I'm very, very excited about. And also, dreading it a wee bit, because it's obviously the first time since Dad passed away, so it's the first time I've been. It's obviously the first time, he can't go anymore, because he's dead, but it's a weird one. I'm very, very excited, but as I said, I'm anxious because I think when, sounds cringy, but I think when You Never Walk Alone comes on, if I'm standing beside strangers, which is probably going to be the case, they're going to be like, fuck me, what's wrong with your man? I'm going to be just in bits. But hopefully James Ward-Prowse won't smash a free kick in from all angles. Pardon me. Mahavis Kudus, who I was absolutely crowing for and throwing myself at all summer, won't turn up and smash Liverpool to bits and Liverpool get a win. But yeah, that for me, the Rugby World Cup, I've really enjoyed it. I think it's been brilliant. I thought we were wrong if Ireland win it. I don't know if I'll see it if Ireland win it, because that's the day of the wee man's due. I mightn't see the final, which would be weird. It'd be weird if I do watch it.
You'll have to call him Mac if they do win it.
Well, you see, that's the thing. I need help with names, boys.
Steve is right there.
I could be holding...
Bundy.
Steve. I could be holding... it could be Johnny. After Johnny Saxon, not obviously the horrible cousin blood. Could be holding a newborn baby like a rugby ball and just punting them out through the window, though, if they lose as well. So it could be a real awkward.
Just call him Johnny Mud McCullough. I think that's a great name.
Johnny Mud McCullough. But yeah, no, I've, as I said, I've really actually really enjoyed this World Cup. I enjoy the coverage of it, especially on, I really like Five Live stuff on it. They've been quite good, quite sort of balanced, even like they're home in England last night, and they're sort of rolling themselves back in because they know obviously they're not as good as they should be. Different things, but in terms of whether Liverpool winning the league or Ireland winning the Rugby World Cup, it's Liverpool winning the league every day of the week. But that's interesting. Patrick was the same. You would always pick Liverpool over both. I think even possibly maybe Northern Ireland doing something. He said Liverpool, but yeah, we'll move on to the actual football that happened at the weekend. We'll just go quickly with Liverpool, and Patrick has recorded a voice note for us. So I want to put that on at the end of the podcast. He saw most of the game, pardon me, on Saturday. I watched the bits of the first half and then decided to take Finn to Craig Alvin Leisure Centre to go to Splash and Slides, which was a brilliant idea. So we did that. I missed it, came back out, Liverpool won, which is excellent. So
did he try and drown you in the pool?
No, he was though cheeky, not to me, to lifeguards, which not only
fair enough.
They were telling him to not stand up and float. So what he was doing was he was waiting till they were back returning, and he was standing up and floats and jumping in. Which I've never been more proud of him. Just to, you know, not respect authority like I don't, and it's just great to see Jonathan. You know, we have another little evil soul coming through, so it's
at least we know there's a future to this podcast.
We're wearing them very well. But yes, we went that came out. I've watched it back, and as Patrick says, like first half Liverpool were poor, sort of a bit of a pattern where they're starting quite slow, but they're seeming to manage games. Then second half kick on and win games, which is a good pattern. But I think what was key was again, and Patrick mentioned him, was Dominic Szoboszlai. I don't know if either of you have seen much of him this season, but he's been absolutely fantastic. I knew he was a good player, but I didn't realise he was this good. He dropped into a two with Curtis Jones, sort of two of them played as base in midfield, and they took over the game in the second half, especially, as I said, Szoboszlai, he was excellent. Brought Luis Diaz on for Mikasa. Mikasa looked absolutely punctured in the first half. I felt very sorry for him. He took him off at half-time. Brought Luis Diaz on, then the chaos king himself, Darwin Nunez, came on in the second half. And as Patrick sees a different side of it, and he'll sort of, as he says in his point on his voice note, he still thinks he's quite raw and needs a bit more coaching. I don't. I think Darwin's great for Liverpool. He causes so much mayhem. Teams don't know what to do with him. He was brilliant for Harvey Elliott's goal. He was really heavily involved. I think he does need a little bit of tweaking for his finishing, but apart from that there, I think he offers so much for Liverpool that going forward is going to be a brilliant asset. And again, they get another win and they just keep rolling on, 2 points behind Man City. But it's that case, I don't know if you're feeling too, Johnny, where you're having to watch how they're doing in matches. And I thought Liverpool were going to have a stressful free season where they're able to bed some new players in, get ready to go again and go after it next year. And I'm not saying they're going to chase Man City all season, but every time you win a game, you're looking to see what Man City are doing. And then you see Man City getting beat 1-0 and you're thinking, okay, here we go. This is cool. This is what way is this leading the table? And then, of course, inevitably they kick on and it's horrible.
Yeah, they're an awful football club to try and go against to win a league title. I mean, I actually watched the Man United game on Saturday, but I flicked on the second half as it kicked off for City, and like they scored like 30 seconds after that, and Teresa said, "You're a dick," and I was like, "No, fair enough. You know, shouldn't have turned on the Man City game at all." Felt like a completely jinxed West Ham. They're a juggernaut. There's so many words to describe them, but it's I suppose maybe, I mean, they have more than Arsenal and Liverpool going against them. Like, I mean, Spurs are right up there as well. And Brighton have had a very good start to the season. Not that they'll go the full way of it, but I think it'll be a better title race this year than it has been in previous years, because there are probably more teams involved. It'll be more exciting for other fans to watch. So I still think inevitably they will win it, because they're fucking paying the hole, and they just do it every year. Like, but I suppose it's nice. Like, Liverpool seem to be back there to where they sort of were before. You know, winning games and great net results, and you know, challenging City. I think they'll do well this year. Now I've seen them for a month or so. Now I've only seen bits and pieces. I haven't watched a full Liverpool game. I think I watched the first half of the Newcastle game, and yeah, I thought that was all over after. I watched the wrong half indeed. Thought it was all over, but I mean, it must be nice. Must be nice for you. You know, new midfield, team challenging again, looking better. You know, it's obviously looking a lot better than what last season looked, you know.
Totally. Like, it's just nice to have a bit of confidence. And Patrick said to me, or was it Andrew, Patrick's wee brother, said to me, like, there's no question the difference between the midfield this year with what we had, Henderson, Fabinho, to what we have this year with McAllister and Szoboszlai. You're going to add Ryan Gravenberch into that too when he's up and running, and Endo as well. Whenever he gets in and out of games, Curtis Jones looks like he's got even better, which is brilliant too. But the two that I mentioned, McAllister and Szoboszlai, just the difference, the gulf in class between them two, what we had. And again, it's sort of a case of Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool. It feels painful during the summer because you wanted them to do more. I think what they should have done more in was centre defence. But people were sort of really writing them off because they got rid of so much experience and different things. But the players they brought in already, they put faith in them. And I think that's one of Klopp's really, one of his best qualities. And he did get a bit of stick because maybe people thought he did hold on to players for too long. But he does seem to be quite ruthless. And at times, like you look at it, Gini Wijnaldum let go. Obviously, Henderson, Fabinho, Coutinho, he sold for a lot of money and he couldn't wait to get it in and different things. And the likes of, even during the week there, I don't know if you saw it, he was asked about, because Jordan Henderson was on the PR train during an international break. And Klopp said, yeah, I told Jordan, you're not going to be first choice, you're going to be changing roles. You're not going to be my first choice. You're going to be coming in off the bench. And Henderson wasn't happy. So Klopp was like, all right then, good. And I don't think nobody mentions it really, but I think that's a great trait he has. I think, like, you look at other managers, you look like Alex Ferguson, obviously was brilliant at it. And then that's what people sort of hang on Ferguson a little bit towards the end, because he didn't change in his midfield. But they don't give him credit for what he actually did other times, you know, Beckham, right, say they're going on, bang, away he went. Vinicius, Roy Keane, right, you're done, both way you go. He was able to move players on as well, and it sort of gets thrown at Ferguson at times, but he held on to Carrick, he held on to Hargreaves, different players, didn't refresh that midfield. And then whenever he'd left, Moyes didn't have a midfield to work with, blah, blah, such and such. But yeah, some managers were really ruthless at it, and I think Klopp showed that this summer, and it is sort of paying off. They do need another centre half. I think they'll have to get that in the summer, if they can't get it in January. But yeah, I don't think they'll win the league. I think Man City are going to win it by a bit. But I think Liverpool are going to certainly challenge a top four game, which is what you want. There's more than what I thought where they'd be at the start of the season. I thought it was going to be quite tough. And they still have tougher games to come. West Ham will be tough. Then they've Brighton, which I don't think any of us want to play. And then they have Spurs. So tough couple of games coming up. But yeah, really good start. Buzzing. So I know Patrick's happy as well. So long may it continue. Mud, before we get on to Brighton and Man City, you just went to Everton yesterday. Everton, for them, they're looking to get new owners in. Don't know if it's been fully agreed yet, and although that might be the best thing for them, going on what's been said about these new owners that are supposedly coming in. But went to Everton, normally not a happy hunting ground, but dug out another win. And did I see a stat, something, Arsenal have conceded the least amount of away goals since the start of last season or something. There's been some unbelievable away record that they have, but look really solid again, Mud, and they'll take 1-0 wins all day.
Yeah, they're sort of boring Man City sort of style at the minute. I mean, it's boring to watch, but it's nice at the end when you can sort of celebrate a win. I mean, Everton barely laid a glove on Arsenal yesterday. It was more the attacking part for Arsenal again, you know, being clinical and taking chances. But listen, they got the win and got over that Goodison Park hoodoo, which was a bit of a relief, because I said yesterday morning, put your house on Everton winning this game. And they didn't, which was nice. I actually heard some odds on the radio this morning about who's going to win the league. Obviously, Man City are still the favourites, and Liverpool, Arsenal, blah, 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 the next two in line. But I think Spurs were 50-1. And actually, what's right, if Man United are 100-1 at the minute, and Chelsea are, you know, worse odds than that, which is surprising, to be quite honest. Like, you know, we're only still in September, but
could Brighton win the league?
I think once, see, Europe starts this week, so I think once they're trying to manage the Europa League, now don't get me wrong, Brighton have, like, Brighton were able to rest Evan Ferguson essentially on Saturday, and Ansu Fati came on in the second half for his debut, but they have some quality going forward, like, you know, and I don't even think Matoma has hit form yet this season, to be quite honest.
He gives me PTSD after what he did to us twice last season.
Yeah,
just looking at him run with the balls giving me nightmares.
Yeah, they're such a good players, like, but I don't know, I think it's probably a stretch too far for them.
This Brighton team, and Steve, I know you were going to come in there and you were going to come into this, is this Brighton team not better than the Leicester team that won?
Well, it is, but that was a very different season. Like, I think
it's still early days in the season, though.
Yeah, I think we should focus on Arsenal for as long as possible. I actually don't think Brighton's issue will be Europe. I think Brighton's issue will be that they are naturally set up to be teams like United, like City, like Liverpool, like Arsenal, and maybe struggle, as we saw against the West Ham, who are happy to just watch them knock the ball around, not do anything and try and catch them on the break. Like, what was that stat in the West Ham Brighton game? Was it 200 passes for Brighton for 13 for West Ham, and West Ham were 1-0 up?
Yeah.
Like, that's their Achilles heel at the moment, is that they're almost too good. But I think, like, it's incredible what they've built there. It's amazing what you can do with a football team when you have a clear vision from top to bottom as to what you want your football club to be. I think Arsenal show a bit of that. I do think Johnny's right. There's a touch of kind of inevitability about Arsenal at the moment. Like, you know, in the United game, like, I know United had the ball in the net, like, on 90 minutes. And I don't celebrate any more goals. I've just stopped because inevitably they're going to get ruled out by VAR or whatever like that, but it felt like United, if that goal stood, United had robbed Arsenal in that game, and ultimately the Arsenal got the two goals at the end, and there's a bit of a air of no matter how badly they're playing, that, like, a bit like Liverpool, I suppose, like Liverpool in the first half against Bournemouth, against Wolves, you know, they should have been 2 or 3 down in both those games. And yet come back and comfortably win, right? It's not even particularly close in the end. And there's that air of inevitability about Arsenal as well that I think, you know, Goodison Park, traditionally, obviously the place where the title race last year really kind of, took its fatal blow. And they went there and they did the job. Like, I saw Arsenal, some Everton fans that I know saying, oh, I think Everton deserved a point for what? Like, didn't offer anything going forward, and while Arsenal weren't necessarily great in the final third, they just looked so solid at the back. And what is it? I think Arsenal have 4 goals conceded this season, United have 10. It might be another 10 games before Arsenal get to 10 goals conceded, and that's the biggest difference between the two teams at the moment. Two teams that I would have said weren't hugely far apart at the start of the season. But I think Arsenal's quality is really kind of shown through in the early games. And not every result has gone their way, of course, but I think they're going to be very much there or thereabouts for Champions League football towards the end of the season.
Yeah, I
would agree with that, to be honest. Like, I didn't celebrate the Martinelli goal yesterday for the exact reason.
Because you knew
I was just... But I don't know. I don't know how the fuck they can call that offside, because
they can't. That was a nonsense decision, right? It was an absolute nonsense decision.
I don't know. I sat there and I put the arm up and I'm like, I can't really go the full way here yet. And I said to Teresa, they're taking too long to make a decision here. If they're ruling it out, because you don't take that long of a decision if you're like unsure. And then, you know, you have all that nonsense with Mike Dean a few weeks ago and saying that he, you know, didn't want to get his mate in trouble. And you're kind of wondering, you know, is there a bit of truth to that? And I sort of think there is, you know, referees stick up for referees, especially the ones that are doing VAR. and it ruins the game. Like, you could actually tell after that goal was disallowed that a bit of the momentum went out of Arsenal, and you know, maybe that was to do with losing Martinelli, but it just sort of killed the game to half time. It was even more of a slog. Like, I'll be honest, if I didn't support either of the two teams playing that game yesterday, it would have been so boring, I feel, the neutral to watch it. It was just, it was a bit of a slog. Like,
you know, I was getting ready to leave mum to head up to hospital because she's finally going in to get her stem cells. So I was getting ready to leave, and I just went, you know what? I'll watch highlights this later. I'm sticking rugby on.
Because that was a wise decision.
It was, yeah. And like, don't get me wrong. Not every game. I don't believe in the mantra or the thing that you have to. You're there to entertain all the time. You're not. You're there to win football matches at this level. I've said it before in this. I think Wayne Steve said it all the time on Bubble Screen. You're there to win matches. You know what I mean? You can entertain, and if you win, class. But the main thing, your main thing, is to there to win matches. And should you stink out a gaff for 91 minutes and score in 92nd minute 1-0, you shouldn't care. Like, that's the whole. You know, I get match going fans, and I'm obviously one next week. It won't be there to entertain, but if I go there next week and it will do nothing for 90 minutes and it comes off Canada's hole and goes in Liverpool win the game 1-0, I'll bounce out of Anfield and get ready for the playing home absolutely jovial. Do you know what I mean? That's the whole point of this. That's the whole point of this, and to win games. I think as Steve said, like, there is an inevitability about Arsenal now which you haven't seen for years. You didn't really see it last year because you thought last year they're in a bit of a crest here. They'll falter away at some point. Now, they did obviously slip away, but they didn't slip away massively. They didn't fall like 20, 30 points behind anyone, but came second. But there's a real inevitability about this Arsenal team this year. They're grinding, and they're grinding out results. As you said, so Liverpool, obviously Man City are countering. I think there's a great title challenge coming up, and at the minute, I know Johnny will probably laugh, tell me shut up. Spurs are in there at the minute because of what they're doing and their big win at the weekend. And just got that place absolutely rocking. And just like, I know we all joke and laugh at Spurs, and maybe for you, John, it's different, but Ange is so hard to hate because he just seems like he's just an honest, genuine person.
And it's I'd agree with you on that. Yeah. Surprisingly enough, he's a likable character. Like,
you know what he is? Do you know how if you're an opposing fan? So if a Spurs fan's listening to this, you know how you know you've got a good manager? The rest of us would probably like him to manage our club someday. Do you know what I mean? I think Manchester United could do with someone like him at the minute, and we'll talk about Man United soon. I know Steve doesn't want to, but he'll feel therapeutic after it. You know, he has the same sort of thing as Klopp about him. Like, he's sort of more of a person or people person, and the way he talks and like the way he's looked after and talked about Richarlison, and you saw how much Richarlison played, how well he played when he came on and did for them at the weekend, and just the way he gets on, talking about his dad last week and the punters that are coming to the game, and he even said about them, so what if you're celebrating, say, beating, he didn't say Sheffield United, but something with someone else beating someone in the last minute. That for 90 minutes, you're there for a release, and that is what it is about. That's what this is all about, a release for 90 minutes. He gets it. Like, so, yeah, Spurs were flying. We talked about Brighton there, but I think Arsenal and Liverpool can push City the furthest out of everyone, but I still, that mutant who scored 7 and 7 is, unless he gets a big injury, I don't even see anyone stop Man City in Europe either. Unfortunately, I actually think they'll get it tougher. This is going to be stupid, a mad thing to say, people are going to laugh at me. I think they'll get it tougher in Premier League than they will in Europe this year. Unless the only team really, I know it's Arsenal's first year back for a little while, and it'll be brilliant for them, brilliant for you, Johnny, too, but the only team I sort of see possibly giving them a run is maybe Real Madrid with Jude the Dude, but nah, I can see them winning another Champions League, unfortunately.
Well, it'll be tough. It'll be tough. I know it's always easy to look at it, you know, the beginning of a new season for Europe anyway. It all kicks off tomorrow. Wednesday, Newcastle play Milan tomorrow, 5:45. So we'll see how that turns out, because I don't particularly think Milan are great at the moment. They got beat for the fifth time by Inter at the weekend this year, so it'll be hurting. But very, I'm actually very excited for it, obviously. You know, we haven't been in the Champions League since, what, 2016, I think it is. So it's a long way, a long time, sorry, to be away from that competition. I think it's been long overdue to be back in it. I think you're right. Like, it is our first year back. We've never won it before. So, you know, the expectation to win it this year is just, I mean, you need to catch a grip of yourself. It'd be lovely if we could do it, but I can't see it. Who's going to stop Man City in the Champions League? You're probably right. Real Madrid. Jude Bellingham's been unreal. And like, you even see Modric and Toni Kroos haven't even been sort of starting for Real Madrid so far this season. So it looks like, you know, the old guard's on the way out. It'll definitely be, I think those two will be their last season with Madrid. And like I said, Jude Bellingham's been on fire. Wearing the Zidane number 5 for Real Madrid. He's been fantastic. It's really nice to see, actually, a player from England go over there and actually do so well, especially a young lad like him. Like, he's still 19, is he? Or is he 20? What age is he at the moment?
I think he's 19.
Yeah, which is absolutely mental. Like, somebody at 19 taking number 5, which was Zidane's number, and I think he knew that. And has got La Liga Player of the Month. He's 20. In his first month. He's 20, yeah.
June. 20.
Even still, 20-year-old going into Real Madrid and taking that number, I think, shows his confidence.
A special yeah. talent. Stephen, we have to do it. We have to rip this Band-Aid off.
Do we really? We do.
Me and Johnny have waited long. No.
Can I just say it, right? Yes. See the first 15 minutes of that game? Man United were the better team.
Yeah.
They really were.
I know. I did watch it. As much as I said I wasn't going to watch it, I did actually watch it.
This is the whole thing. This is why we love sport.
Yeah. Sucker for punishment. I did turn it off at halftime.
You would have watched the Raiders get thumped by the Bills last night too.
I did not. Oh. No, I didn't do that to myself. Well, I won't take two defeats in a weekend.
He refuses.
Did Rizzo?
He did, because Rizzo has convinced himself that when Man United lose, the Raiders are guaranteed to win.
To be fair.
And my God, my sweet summer child.
To be fair, that was going on for ages, because I was always texting him about it, and then I texted him this morning saying, hang on, both teams lost the weekend, and he said, what did he say? God has
forsaken us.
No, he said something to me, hang on, where is it? Because little Rizzo loves this,
He did. He used to love putting up the Thanos thing, properly balanced.
Stop the world and let me off. So he texted me back and said. but yes, Stephen, Manchester United, discuss.
As Johnny says, she thought for 15 minutes they looked quite good. But there's something, you know, whereas when Liverpool go goal down, it feels kind of inevitable that they're going to come back and win. When United go goal down, it feels like he's not going to adjust, and he doesn't adjust. And as soon as teams kind of figure them out, it becomes all really just dysfunctional. The third goal, the Brighton build up was astonishing. Like, it was really, really good. But I think there was, maybe it was a third goal or second goal, but whatever it was, there was 5 occasions where a little bit of a more engaged press from Rashford, and he might have completely changed the course of the thing.
Just the 30 passes.
What?
The 30 passes for a goal.
Yeah. It's like, just the, like, and there's players around him trying, right? And the thing about Rashford is, like, I will defend him to the death for what he's done off the field, right? You know, and that's much more important than football. But, like, you've got Casemiro and Eriksen behind you who have a combined age of the fucking Cretaceous period. And, you know, you have to do the work in the press. And he just wasn't willing to do it. And that's just symptomatic of, well, like, what's the manager going to do? Take him off? The options aren't there, you know, because he's alienated Sancho. So Sancho can't come on the wing. Garnacho still has a bit to kind of learn. Up front, the solution is definitely not Martial coming off the bench, as the boos that greeted his arrival kind of indicated. And it's just like, it's mad to think they've spent the money they've spent. And I know a huge amount was made about, like, you know, Brighton's first team costs 18 million and United's cost over 200 million and all that, like, right? But it, like, there's a management happening. There's a coaching thing happening at Brighton that's not happening at Manchester United. I remember texting, I think it was the group I texted, or maybe it was you on your own, Phil, like last year when Ten Hag first came in, and he was teaching Aaron Wan-Bissaka to give a 1-2. And I was going, hang on a second.
That was in the group.
Yeah.
I think I remember you put that in the group as well.
What is going on here? Like, what are we doing? And yeah, it's really difficult. Like, there was a really, like, and I hate to say this because I don't think he's a very good journalist. And I don't think he's a very good writer. But Oliver Kay had a piece on Manchester United and the Athletic, and it was about, like, the battle for the heart and soul of United. And it feels like the club is 50-50 split between those who feel like the club is living too much in the past. And, like, you know, a lot of the accusations that were thrown at Liverpool, the fact that, like, a lot of the pundits on TV now are Manchester United, ex-Manchester United players, because they had the success they had when they did, a lot of the stuff that Liverpool experienced at the start of the Premier League. And then there's some who are saying they're not diving into the past enough. They're not looking at what Ferguson did and things like that. And Ten Hag isn't as ruthless as he needs to be. And not, like, you know, they've half-arsed a few decisions recently and ultimately just came out looking awful in all of them. The Sancho thing, I think he comes across looking terribly. I think the Greenwood stuff obviously speaks for itself. The whole club comes across, but Ten Hag was driving that. It was Ten Hag who wanted him to stay. And look, the thing is, if you make those decisions, you have to fucking stand over them and you have to be willing to back it up as well with performances on the field. And, you know, the amount of goals they're conceding, and it feels like I'm watching the same goal once a game where someone dummies Martinez and, you know, scores. It's like, it feels like it's always the same goal. But the thing is, right, and this is how stupid football is, Garnacho is a half an inch further back or leans back a half an inch more and is onside and United beat Arsenal 2-1 and everything's rosy. Like, football is, like, so, even though they didn't deserve to win that game, as I said earlier on, like, but football is so narrative driven right now, and I feel like no matter what happens, the narrative around United is that Ten Hag is a failure, and he's, because of the way Manchester City have just dominated and the way Liverpool have dominated, you don't have time to build that, you don't have time to grow. Everything is instant, and every loss is the worst loss you've ever suffered. Liverpool's 3-0 loss to Brighton last year was much worse than United's 3-1 loss at the weekend in terms of how Brighton played and in terms of how the opposition played. But, like, that doesn't matter now, right? Because what matters is the last result, and what matters is being able to slag Man United fans on Twitter. But, like, it's frustrating. It's frustrating because there are good players there. There are good players who can play quite well there. I think Eriksen, considering his age, like, I thought he played very well. I think Casemiro's been asked to do the job of two players for two seasons now, and you can see it wearing him down. I've said it so many times, but I'm convinced that if United had actually gone out, and this is where the disjointed thinking across the club comes from, right? They go out and they get a forward in Hoyland who looks the part, looks really, really good. They go out and get a goalkeeper, which they absolutely needed. But the one position they fundamentally needed to fill was centre half, and they didn't. And because of that, now you've got this ragtag bunch of fucking misfits playing centre half for United at all times. When the best thing that could happen United would be to have two solid centre halves, move Martinez into midfield just slightly deeper than Casemiro. And I think you solve a huge amount of United's issues with that one thing, that one signing. That was the signing that they didn't make, and the whole thing is going to go pear-shaped. And I said to you, like, United's problem is going to be they're going to start the season slowly, and they're going to then ramp it up towards the middle of the season and then fall off again at the end and probably miss out on Champions League football. And they've done the first part. I didn't expect them to lose three. But, you know, they're the most frustrating team to fucking watch, and I'm an Oakland Raiders fan.
Yeah. The point about Liverpool and Brighton last year was actually a good one to make, because it just sort of shows, pardon me, the difference in how obviously Klopp is viewed and how Ten Hag is viewed, and not just mean by the fan bases, but also even by media. Now, there was some mentalists last year who thought, oh, Klopp should go, Klopp should walk, different things, and all this year, and obviously now I look at it. Whereas with Ten Hag, it's, and like, I give you so much stick on him, Stephen, but he's like, you feel like he's like two defeats away. And I don't think the Bayern Munich one should count, because that's Bayern Munich. But he's
for reminding me that that's coming up.
Yeah, Wednesday night, 8 o'clock. He's two defeats away from being like, look, he could be on his arse here, he could be at the door, and just be another cycle of United going around again. But my problem with Ten Hag is, once you've highlighted, he let himself down bucket loads, I think, with Greenwood. And he then, obviously, I mean, everyone knows going on with that. And then the way that the Sancho thing's gone on, like, don't get me wrong, if a football player is, or any member of your team, your staff, is being an ass, you do need to sort that. But when it's a young football player, male or female, I think calling them out publicly is, you're just asking for trouble. I think it's stupid. I don't think it helps. I think football players are so much in the public eye that we think we own them sometimes, and maybe there's a case of we're paying their wages, so we expect them to perform, but when it comes to their personality, their mental health, there's something going on outside, we don't own that, and we shouldn't own that, because, and we shouldn't really know, because what Ten Hag did there when he did that, I feel, is he chucked Sancho out in the open, and inevitably there is going to be people that are going to stick up for Sancho, obviously, and feel for him, but there's also going to be people that are going to just jump all over it and make it worse for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was absolutely idiotic from, I really do, I really think I was so stupid from tonight. And don't get me wrong, Sancho could be the biggest dickhead in that, he could be the biggest dickhead in that club, the biggest dickhead in training. You do that behind closed doors, and then when it comes to the transfer window, you move him on. You phase him out that way, and you move him on and do it like that. You don't, you know, the way he got on, the way he talked about him not being part of the squad, and then exploding, the whole thing got exploded then, because Sandra's a young lad, he's gonna, that's what people do, they jump on the social media, tell their lives, it's just the way people are at the minute, and he's obviously snowballed from there. And I think it's just, you look at the way Dele Alli has been looked at the Everton, you look at what I just mentioned Ange did with him, the way Ange talked about Richarlison, and about footballers and about young people and different things. And I just think, for me, the way Ten Hag did that, if I was an United fan, the results are not great, don't get me wrong, the Greenwood stuff as well is just heinous, but that there, when you just thought he couldn't take another step back, that
I think he seems very frustrated to me, like even all the other wee comments about like Brighton, for example, like Brighton have spent a lot of money and stuff, you know, all that kind of crap. And, you know, even after the Arsenal game, and he said about the Hoyland penalty, showed that a penalty, and onside with Garnacho. And, you know, to be fair, it was very tight. At the time, I thought he was onside. But, like, trying to find these daft excuses, like, you know, we even think about how Arteta handled the Aubameyang situation. Like, you know, he didn't come out and say, well, Aubameyang just won't be in the squad today. That's just all, that's what he kept saying. He's not ready to play, that sort of thing. That's all he said. He didn't, you know, badmouth Aubameyang or say anything about Aubameyang. He just dealt with him that way. And it's like, United fans were pretty pleased with Ten Hag, and I'm sure they still are. Like, don't get me wrong, it's just been a bad start to the season. And they've had two tough games there, you know, Arsenal away, Brighton at home. Brighton are absolutely flying. And like Steve already pointed out, Brighton are well suited to play teams like Man United and like Arsenal and Liverpool. Like, they went to the Emirates the end of last year and beat us 3-1. You know, the beat Liverpool, you know, they're well capable of beating all the top teams. So it's tough games. And then obviously Bayern Munich this week as well. Like, Harry Kane probably got a call. I don't know who's at home. Is that, are Bayern at home for that game?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, going away to Munich is always going to be tough. Like, who do United have next in the league, Steve?
Burnley.
Well,
who they lost to 3-0 behind closed doors not that long ago.
you can't take them results really too seriously, I suppose. Like, you know, we've had a few behind closed doors games against like Watford and things like that, and then ended in draws and that sort of nonsense. Like, but you would expect United to get 3 points there. And I actually have been really impressed with Højlund in the two games I've seen him. You know, he came on and was quite physical against Gabriel and really gave him a lot to think about in the last 20 minutes at the Emirates. And I thought he was decent in the game against Brighton. Obviously, he was very unlucky with, you know, Rashford just being like a centimetre of a ball to play as well. I mean, unlucky. Could have got his first goal and his first start for United. But I think he will score goals for United. But you're right, it's centre-back. You know, you look at the difference when Arsenal have a good centre-back, for example, Saliba and Gabriel from last year and what that done for them. You know, that's what United leave. You know, United finished the game at the Emirates with Harry Maguire and Johnny Evans as centre-back.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the level he's needed, and he's all know that. United has spent... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, every single Manchester United, you know... of their great teams has been built on the foundation of great centre halves. Like, people don't rate Rio Ferdinand and Vidic, and I know that Vidic gets his Torres slagging and stuff like that, but that's where they built their teams from, and that allows you to have that freedom in midfield that United just don't have at the moment, because there's a constant worry that the centre halves just aren't up to it. And like, you look at the difference, you know, signing Virgil van Dijk made to Liverpool, it turned them into Premier League winners. I just think it's so underrated as a position, when realistically, like, that sets you up, that ability to, you know, keep having a great goalkeeper obviously does help, but like, you know, I think if you've got one world-class centre half and someone of any competency beside him, you've got the makings of a team that can challenge for a title. And right now, you know, you don't have any good centre halves. I know I'm probably alone in my Martinez as a midfielder argument,
nope,
but I genuinely think that if you got the Varane that's won all the trophies, like, grand, but that's not what United have got. They've got like the broken, like, little version of them. And that's a shame, because I actually thought he could be really good for United. But that's the story of the last 10 years of United, signing players who there's a reason other teams have let them go. That's sadly it. Like,
see, if I read, was someone saying it, either on a Five Live podcast or an Athletic or somewhere, but I might have been one of the second captains. If Real Madrid are willing to sell you something, then run. Walk away from it. Now, if they're actively willing to, like, we'll sell him, especially someone's won five or whatever, Champions League's different. I'm not talking about if someone's towards the end of their career, in their middle 30s or late 40s or whatever, middle to late 30s, and or they've had injuries or different things, all this here crack. But if they're like, someone that's been starting basically for them, and they're like, we'll listen to ideas for him, usually means that they're on the wane, because Real Madrid don't let someone go if they think they look Kroos and Modric are still there. Do you know what I mean? As Johnny highlighted earlier, I know they might be phased out this year, maybe, but they're still there. Casemiro, Varane, Real Madrid are like, we'll let them go on. And it's one you need
to sold us Odegaard for 35 million, you know, which maybe they're,
could be regretting that, but again, he wasn't getting a look in and he was young, and when Arsenal were buying him or had him on loan, that's a bit different. I mean, someone, a genuine player that's been starting for them, has been key to successful teams. When Real Madrid are like, I think it was Roy Smith actually might have said it in one of the club one night, just be careful, because it usually means then that Real Madrid have seen that he's possibly coming to the end or slowing down, and you know, that's what's happened with United. And
I think Liverpool are like that as well. Like, you wouldn't be buying someone from Liverpool.
I wouldn't buy anyone off Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a chance.
Yeah.
Wouldn't buy a single soul football player off Jurgen Klopp. No way, because they are burnt out.
But also, like, the way people said, like, oh, sell Salah, it's 200 million, he's towards the end of his career. The man has, like, he's racking up the assists this year, you know?
Yeah. I'm glad he didn't get sold in the end, but I think he will get sold in the summer. Just one wee point. Whoever doesn't rate Rio Ferdinand as a footballer is a dose. In my opinion, he's the best non-Virgil van Dijk centre half the Premier League's ever seen. I know that. I'm just talking about it. I think Ferdinand as a centre half was absolutely outstanding. Yeah. Honestly, like John Terry, Ferdinand, in my opinion, is no competition. It's always Ferdinand.
I think it's easy to forget because he's such a fucking arsehole off the field.
And even Vidic, I love the fact that Torres mugged him off 2 or 3 times, but Vidic was absolutely outstanding too. Like, and it's hard for me to say that, but those two, you're right, those two were cornerstones. And it, as you've made the point, United didn't. They bought Højlund, who looks like a great player, but they didn't for whatever reason.
Well, the reason is they couldn't afford to, and that's where it comes back to like the club being broken top to bottom. You know, they're signing fucking why signing Spurs players on loan on transfer deadline day. Is that what Manchester United have become? You know? I think there's something needs to happen at the club to fix things, because like, you know, when you've Harry Maguire sitting there collecting his very handsome wages, and that's costing you being able to go out and actually buy a proper footballer. You know, you find a way to get rid of him, you know. That said, and I don't know if we have time to discuss in full, but there was a question asked in our WhatsApp group earlier on in terms of which team is easier fixed, United or Chelsea. Still think it's United. I think Chelsea have lots and lots of issues. More issues on the pitch than United, I think, and probably as many off it.
Which team or which club? Team, because obviously teams different if you're talking about players.
What was the question? Was it international club or team? I can't recall.
We'll just group it as the world thing. So who's easier to fix at the minute? Manchester United as a club and a team, or Chelsea as a club and a team?
I personally think Chelsea are just back to home.
I think Chelsea are mental. I think Todd Bowley is a complete and utter lunatic. And I think it's, you need to be, you read between the lines, the Chelsea money might be coming from Saudi Arabia too, which will all come out.
Oh, almost definitely is.
I think Chelsea are easily fixed if someone just locks Todd Bowley away for a transfer window or two, tell him to wind his neck in, or like distracts him. You know, like distracts him with something, sends him off to the sun or something for 2 weeks. I think United are, and it's not like I'm taking great pleasure in saying this, I am. They're just completely broken, as you've highlighted, Stephen, from top to bottom. And United need new owners, but then, as you will say, you need the right owners. You need new owners that are going to be the right people. They aren't going to be just an oil or state-owned thing that's going to have horrendous human rights behind them. You need someone that's going to be, you know, someone like Tony Bloom. What's going on? I know that they have their thing with owning multi-clubs, but I mean, in the background, it's going to have the club at the right heart, at its heart. They're going to do, and it could be a couple of years more pain, but they're going to have the club moving in the right direction. There's clearly issues going on just with Ten Hag and even certain players. There's issues. There's been issues with the women's team and things have gone on. They've been losing players. Old Trafford's fallen down. It's absolutely, I don't go to it. Like, with friends that have been, just say it's a disgrace, like toilets leaking, different things. It's Old Trafford, like it's Manchester United. They've won so much. Kind of needs another upgrade, and the Glazers, and I'm not going to go all Gary Neville, but they're just sucking, they have sucked the club dry, definitely. But they've also, because it's hard for us to say it when you look at it, they suck the club dry, and the way they're doing it, but also as an opposing fan, you're seeing them spend money in Højlund, you're seeing them bring in Casemiro and Varane, different things, spend money in Martinez, Onana. So that's where the slagging comes out in. But I think United's just absolutely fucked. I really do. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. And
I thought you said this was going to be therapy.
It is therapy, because I think...
Yeah, for you.
I think it will get better. I think, but for United as a whole, but just for you personally, I hope it's not an oil state or state-owned entity that buys them, and then it'll be really shitty call for you, but I think as a club it will get better, because I think they're not at the point yet of no return, but they're heading there at a, like the bullet train in Japan. They're heading there at a great speed.
They're a bigger club and a bigger brand than Chelsea. And like, I don't like to refer to football clubs as brands, but that's essentially what they are.
It's like everybody knows. They are a huge thing, and it is obviously, as a Liverpool fan, you're like, this class. But as a friend, you're like, fucking hell, this is absolutely dreadful. The way things are going, like it puts you off kilter. Seeing Manchester United, you sort of think after 1 year of them being absolutely kamikaze in the year of Moyes, I thought, all right, well, they'll sort that out. They'll come back and they'll win the league again, or they'll go for the Champions League, and I'll be back to listening to all these nonsense again, blah, blah, and then it went on again, and then Louis van Gaal came in, and then Mourinho, and Solskjaer, Ralf Rangnick, and now Ten Hag, and you're like, hang on, it's 10 odd years gone past, and they're still repeating, rinse and repeat. It's just insane. I think Man United, Chelsea can be easily fixed if Todd Boehly is not allowed near Wi-Fi. Chelsea can be easily fixed, I think.
Is it? Like, I think, I think you're in the rare, and maybe Arsenal a little bit too. American owners tend to be as involved as Boehly is. So I think that's where their issues are going to come. And I just don't think they know what they are, like, on the field as well. And I think, you know, whatever you can say about Ten Hag, like, he sets the team up with a certain philosophy and a certain style. He might not change it as much as you want, and he might not adapt as much as you want, but it feels like there's something there. Like, you've Pochettino coming out and saying Chelsea are playing with a back four all season when they clearly weren't, you know, they very clearly weren't. And they did at the weekend or whatever, you know. And it's like, I can see what's happening in front of me. I know that's not a back four. And it's stuff like that I think is just a little bit messier. But that said, I think neither team are in great shape at all.
Yeah, you're not expecting either of those two teams to challenge
for anything really this Conference year. League, here we come.
I think that stop today with Chelsea just really shocked me. They haven't beat a team in the top half from January 2022. Like, that's absolutely insane when you think about that for a club like Chelsea. Have it that was Spurs, the bit 2-0. I mean, that's nuts. I had to check and see that was true, and apparently it is. Like, I mean, that is mental. Like, what have they got? 6 wins this year? Like, Chelsea have just fallen off the face of a cliff and then fallen off another cliff and just kept going down the hill? Like, what in the I didn't think I could get this good. You know what I mean?
But I think
I know they brandied like that wee shit, like, but I'm telling you.
That's the thing, like, but because it's Chelsea, you're like, they're a couple of doing something stupid again in the transfer window or doing something, and then you're like, oh, right, that's quite a decent side now. But yeah, it's just I think they are much easily fixed, because I think, you know, see with Todd Boehly, they have sort of sorted money at the background, and the club seems to be running okay, and I know they're talking about redevelopment or new stadium all down the line, different things like that there. But whereas United's just like every time they seem to turn or open another door or whatever happens every day.
But I also think there's an expectation thing. I think Johnny kind of said it earlier, like this is Chelsea's level. This is not United's level. Has it been.
Manchester United should be
bad Manchester United season should be fifth place.
Yeah,
like that should warrant the sacking. Like,
I think it was Fergie was his worst third when he got third, running.
Yeah.
When he got up and running, like, was third, but oof, the long way from there, sir. But yes,
I think it shows how good of a job he actually done. By the way, just to finish, to be honest, like, yeah, Jesus,
he was ridiculous. But fuck him, you ruined my childhood. I think that's sort of do us this week, because I need to get to bed. I'm actually punctured. We were going to talk about Marvel and Star Wars, but we'll park that because we got quite into it there on sort of Manchester United, and let Steve, hopefully Steve feels a little bit better about how things are going. But yeah, that'll do it for this week. I'm going to finish the podcast, going to finish tonight with us. But there's a little voice note from Paddy that Patrick's recorded, so he couldn't make it tonight, or he was talking about Liverpool at the weekend. Oh, he touched on Brighton. Sorry, Steve. And then he also talked about how he was in Kazakhstan following Northern Ireland, where they went out and got beat. He travelled thousands of miles across Europe and Asia to watch Northern Ireland get beat in Kazakhstan. Excellent, I think. But yes, he's going to touch on that. And then hopefully we'll have the big man be back next week. Big Brandy to talk about Chelsea and different things and tell us how you get on in Italy. Yes, European club football is back tomorrow night. Champions League on Tuesday and Wednesday. But the real trophy is on Thursday, obviously. Europa League, Liverpool playing LASK. Obviously, that is the big one. But yes, Champions League's back. I can't wait for the Champions League. I get to watch this year and not have to panic or stress. Just sort of hopefully watch all of your teams get slap stupid, which would be excellent. But yes, enjoy the football this week. Hopefully your team loses if you support. We'll hear from you again next week. Good luck.
Well, people, just going to send you a quick voice note just because I can't make the pod tonight about the Liverpool game. So, yeah, Liverpool were absolute dog shit first half, completely terrible. Quite down there with how bad and disorganised and haphazard and, you know, lack of hunger, lack of fight that we showed at times last season when things were going so awry. Neto was getting so much joy down the left. I think Klopp had asked Gomez to kind of do what Trent does and invert and come in field to get involved in the play, but Gomez isn't really that kind of player. He's not good enough to do that, and it was leaving just an absolute chasm at left wing for Neto to exploit. And Neto was brilliant. He was very, very direct. He had Gomez and Mata both really, really worried, backpedaling a lot. And if it wasn't for a very wasteful Matheus Cunha, we probably should have been 2-0 down at half time. No bother. Second half, things thankfully changed. McAllister, who has been very good since he joined, had a really poor half. He was playing number six, but also been playing at altitude in Bolivia during the week. He looked absolutely goosed. He was getting run round. So what he did was he brought on Luis Diaz for him, put Diaz out wide left, and then changed to a double pivot of Curtis Jones and Dominic Szoboszlai. Szoboszlai was incredible, as he has been every single game I've seen him so far. You could put him in any outfield position and he would probably be the best player on the pitch. He looks like as close to Steven Gerrard as I have seen really since 2014, 2015. Even at that stage, Gerrard was probably on the wane. So he looks fantastic. He completely controlled the game, dictated the tempo, played great passes, covered well, and Liverpool really started to use that as a platform. And Diaz was really direct down the left. He was able to push Semedo back, who had been such a threat in the first half. And on the right hand side, you know, Salah's always a threat. I thought Gakpo had looked very ordinary in the first half. He was running towards the ball a lot, which was sort of making the pitch quite small. It wasn't really stretching defenders. And I think Max Kilman and who was playing beside him? Collins, no. Whoever the other Wolves centre half was, would have been very disappointed whenever they saw Nunez come on for Gakpo. Nunez looked good in parts. He's still completely brainless with a low footballing IQ, but he offered a different kind of threat. He offered that run in behind. He held the ball up better. He still did things like pick the wrong pass. It was a time when he should have gambled for a tap in at the back post, but just stood on his heels dawdling, and I think any striker worth their salt would have been absolutely flying into the 6-yard box. And that those things kind of worry me about Nunez. You know, I know he can create a lot of chaos, and he has got some important goals, no more so than the two against Newcastle, which were great finishes, but I think he still draws ropes and needs a lot of coaching. But yeah, he offered something. Wolves were just dropping deeper and deeper, and eventually it paid off. Robertson scored the goal, and then Elliott scored that kind of deflected effort slash own goal at the end of the game. I think Liverpool definitely merited a win. As bad as they were first half, they were completely dominant. Second half, Wolves barely had a kick. And it's a good win. Like we were walloped there last season at probably our lowest point. So encouraging, very encouraging to pick up 3 points, keep a bit of momentum, and hopefully use the Europa League during the week and then the League Cup the week after to blood youngsters and sort of use the squad. I'd like to see Endo get minutes. I'd like to see Gravenberch, start games. And you can use it for the likes of Harvey Elliott. You can, Jarrell Kwanzaa, who did quite well against Wolves, use it to develop him as well. And I'd love to see, from a Northern Ireland perspective, I'd love to see Conor Bradley get fit and give him some minutes in these competitions as well. Because I think Gomez, as good as he is as a centre half, I don't think he's a right back. I think Bradley offers more there, a bit of impetus and maybe a bit more kind of natural attacking ability. So that'll be great to see. So we'll see how all that pans out. So that's my thoughts on Liverpool. I did see all of the second half of the Brighton Manchester United game, which I'm sure the boys will touch on, particularly Steve, who called that they would be walloped by Brighton, and he was so correct. Brighton were brilliant. They're passing, creating overloads, all like on the deck passing, like really, really good, and they know when to switch the play. We all know they've got, good owners, they've got a great manager, they've got a great recruitment team, and it all just seems to work. United looked lost, they were chasing shadows. I think if there was a kind of positive for United, I think Hoyland looked like he is going to be a handful in the Premier League. I think with service, he could be great. Now he's going to be hindered by having no wingers because Anthony is, facing allegations. And he's fallen out with Sancho. So they ended up playing this kind of congested, kind of central diamond thing that maybe wasn't the best for Hoyland. But I think with service, he could score, easily score 15 goals this season. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, fair play to Brighton. Squad looked great. They even rested a few players who had been on international duty. And obviously, Evan Ferguson's just coming back from a bit of a knock. So they look fantastic. Liverpool play them soon. Could be a very good game. But yes, they are my main musings. And then, yes, I was in Kazakhstan last week. Went a very, very far way to have it reinforced once again how bad Northern Ireland are at football. But great trip, great crack. Got to see Besiktas game in Istanbul as well, which was great, great atmosphere. Got to see Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who looked very good as a kind of number 10 in a 4-2-3-1. Probably the standout performer was Gedson Fernandez, who Spurs fans will know had from a short-lived spell there under Mourinho. But he was probably the best player on the pitch, broke everything up, looked excellent. And there has been a bit of money spent by the Turkish clubs, more so on wages rather than transfer fees this year. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get a bit of a run in the Champions League. That's Galatasaray, that is. That's me. So yes, good luck, and hopefully see you soon. Bye.